Well, it was a time for gold and glitter, for really expensive frocks, for massive bling and excess. Steady on. I don't mean Trump Tower, or do I? Stop and think about this for a moment. The allure of excess is not confined to any one era. What goes down in Manhattan and Washington, D.C. could easily parallel the court of the Sun King at Versailles. Dr. Robert Wellington is a lecturer at the Centre for Art History and Art Theory at the ANU. And he's making just that link as he explores the politics of glitter and guilt. Spell that however you like. He's at an NGA conference in 2 weeks' time, but with me now, Robert, good morning to you.
Morning.
The conference focus is Enchanted Islands, Fatal Shore, Living Versailles. I think perhaps that for those of us who are not exposed to life at the refined heights of exceptional power, it's hard to imagine what this kind of life is actually like.
Right, well, yes, I mean, that's our hope for this conference. The conference is going to be on 17th and 18th of March. It's going to have a really broad appeal, I think, to people who've been to the exhibition to give more of a sense of what life was like. You see the objects, but it's quite hard to understand how they would have been used, how people would have moved around in dresses like that, sat at tables like that, and that's what we're hoping to bring to the public.
So describe to me where Versailles sat in terms of world power at the time of its apotheosis.
Well, Versailles was really a statement of world power, and this is in a time of instability in the early 17th century. France had been through many kind of civil wars and was at war with its neighbours. And Louis XIV was a young king, and he offered a new promise to France. And in fact, the building of Versailles and the many kind of aspects of patronage in the arts by Louis XIV was all about that, all about cementing stability, but also creating a kind of a central image for France in a new era.
And so what was that image? How did the king see himself? How was he seen by those around him? What were the intentions for this extraordinary opulence?
It's a tricky one because we tend to think of people, patrons being private people. But Louis XIV was a king. He was actually, he was both a man, but he was also the representative of France. He was a sign. He was a symbol himself. And so the opulence that he sort of brought around him through commissions in the arts was all about representing the fecundity and abundance of France. It was about France as a successful state. He was France.
Yes, it's an interesting one to conjure with, isn't it? Because it's not necessarily the case that all courts saw themselves in this way. This is, I mean, Versailles, I guess, is a kind of fairy tale vision, literally, of what a court could look like. But there have been other times and places that called for restraint or for plainness. But this was quite a particular visual language that evolved.
It was very strategic, and we can't romanticise it too much because there was a very particular strategy. Louis XIV had this amazing minister. His name was Jean-Baptiste Colbert. Yeah. And Colbert had this idea of creating new industry in France, luxury industry. He didn't want the money to go outside of France. He didn't want people to buy things from Dutch traders or from the Indies or from elsewhere. He wanted France to be the producer of luxury items. He wanted French nobles, and in fact nobles from all over Europe and the world, to buy French. And really that's what Versailles was all about. It was a big advert for the French luxury industry.
Which draws us in inexorably towards someone else who loves a bit of guilt and never saw a marble column he didn't like, and that would be the current US president, Mr. Donald Trump. Now, he's got the $100 million penthouse. It seems to me that there are actually quite a lot of parallels with ostentatious consumption. You've just said buy French. Mm. Of course, we're hearing buy American.
Yes.
There's a lot of political strategic thought behind this as well, I think.
Well, this is what I'm trying to think through. And you know, at our conference, I'm giving a paper about Donald Trump and Versailles. And I've been thinking about this issue. It's part of a bigger research project for me. I think, firstly, it's easy to draw that connection between Donald Trump and Louis XIV, because Louis XIV, that is, because, you know, the glitz and the gold and the marble and all of that, it seems to sort of point to a correlation. When you look closely, particularly for me as a specialist, I can see that Trump, these things don't really look actually that French. You know, they are a kind of...
they're sort of pastiche cartoon. I think there's a sort of a cartoon appearance about all of this.
Yeah.
It's almost as if Mr. Trump is creating an image. I think about Veronica Lodge's father, Mr. Lodge in The Archies, the archetypal millionaire. It's as if there's a cartoon vision of a millionaire being promulgated.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and actually that's where my research is going at the moment, and my talk is certainly going to bring some of this in. In the 19th century, in New York, this was a time of new money, robber barons, exactly. You know, railroad industrialists. Yeah. How did they create a new identity for themselves among the high, kind of higher society? Well, what they did was they bought French antiques and they built these kind of amazing mansions on Fifth Avenue. One of them was called the Petit Chateau and it had rooms designed in 18th century French style. Donald Trump isn't interested in real antiques. You know, Donald Trump, I think, is probably referencing those 19th century millionaires. You know, he's referencing it's all the colours and shapes and forms in a very basic and superficial way of that kind of presentation without any of the content, without any of the real antiques, you know.
Yeah, and I wonder if we go back to Louis XIV, who was he specifically trying to impose this image on? Was it ordinary people? Was it the nobles? Where does that fit?
Well, that's debated. I mean, the traditional story will say that Louis XIV creates Versailles as a kind of gilded cage for the nobility. They all had to be there in order to have status. That's the way that status was created, proximity to the king. And so he was representing to a class of people who in previous generations had risen up against the king of France, and this was a way of controlling them. Today, we're thinking more about mercantile culture and more about the way that the nobles promoting French luxury industry was a way of making France rich and stable and actually bringing stability to the country, which had, I don't want to romanticise this, but it does have benefits to everybody. You know, if there are fewer wars, if people are generally more wealthy.
People are busy making tapestries.
Exactly, there's industry. People are making stuff. People have employment. Not everybody. Let's not romanticise it. But it certainly does.
Yeah, I've got a couple of texts about this. One saying Las Vegas-ish. Yes, indeed. And someone else saying glitter and gilt. Gilt, really? It might be 10 o'clock. It's too early for such a bad dad joke. Love it. like Trump Tower, I think the French court would have looked and sounded extraordinary to the most ordinary working person. But of course, people eventually overthrew the court in part because of that very opulence. And in the French case, people were angry because the opulence was chewing up a substantial chunk of the national budget. Oh, you know, perhaps a bit like the security at Mar-a-Lago. So there's a balancing act here going on with how far the opulence goes and how willing people are to be on board with that.
Well, look, I think there are a couple of myths around this. Firstly, if French aristocrats didn't wear French silks, the French silk manufacturers went crazy because they were the leaders in fashion and they were the people who determined there being a successful industry in France. And so I think that the presentation of opulence and luxury amongst the nobles had these kind of big mercantile implications. I think the bourgeoisie in the revolution of 1789 were very clever at using that kind of representation against the nobility. I mean, let's face it, the poor in France did not benefit from the revolution of 1789. It was a shift in power from wealthy kind of mercantile bourgeoisie, you know, to the wealthy bourgeoisie, I would say.
From the nobility
from
to
the
bourgeoisie,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Robert Wellington, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks so much.